there and welcome to the County Conversation, a podcast featuring employees and subject matter experts from the Fairfax County government, assessing programs, services, and items of interest to residents of Fairfax County. I'm your host, Jim Person, and today I'm chatting with Alicia Blackwell, Deputy Director of the Department of Family Services, and our topic today is Medicaid, specifically some changes to the program that's going into effect on October 1st. Alicia, welcome to the County Conversation Podcast.
Thanks so much, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here.
Glad to have you here for a meaty topic, I must say. It's definitely different than some of the topics we've had on before, so should be an interesting conversation. I'll set this up by saying that when federal law H.R. 1, some know it as the One Big Beautiful Bill, passed last summer, 2025, it introduced new work requirements known as community engagement requirements for certain Medicaid enrollees, as well as restricting taxpayer-funded health benefits to a narrow, specific baseline of legal residents. This legislation has caused a structural shift away from the federal government to the states to implement stricter verification standards, while also substantially narrowing Medicaid eligibility rules for certain non-citizen adults starting October 1st of 2026. So, Alicia, we're going to focus not on Medicaid, but also the work requirement stuff. And I think we discussed pre-chat that we would start with the requirements for the non-citizen adults for Medicaid. So what are we actually talking about here? What is this gobbledygook I read? What does that mean?
Thanks so much, Jim. We're going to make sure that as we talk about this today, that it's in layman's terms and in ways that people that are impacted can clearly understand and know where to get help and resources if they think they might be impacted. So just as you mentioned, there's kind of two big buckets of changes as it relates to Medicaid. And so I'll talk first about the non-citizen resident eligibility criteria that does change beginning October 1st of 2026. And so these changes require adults to be a U.S. citizen, a lawful permanent resident, a Cuban or Haitian entrant, or a compact of free association migrant to be eligible for full benefits. And so this is a significant reduction of the list of previously eligible statuses that were eligible to receive Medicaid. And so beginning October 1st, those statuses will be narrowed to the four or so that I just listed. And so if you think you might be impacted by these changes, or if you receive a notification from our state partners letting you know that you have been identified as one of these individuals, it'll be really important to be kind of responsive to that notification and know what that means to you. There are some exceptions, though, that I'm happy to go through.
Yeah, we'll get into the exceptions in just a second, but I want to point out, this is effective October 1st, but we are talking here and it's August.
That's right.
And you mentioned notifications going out. My understanding is that they have already started going out. So if someone receives a notification, what should they do? And on the second part of that question, if they don't receive the notification and they think they should, what should they do?
Yeah. So if you've received a notification, then there's going to be some specific information in that notification about where you can call if you have questions. Perhaps what you can do if you need further assistance. And so if you have not received that letter and you think you might be impacted, you can call the state hotline that can assist, which is Common Help. And that is 855-635-5370. Common Help is the state office that can help with those questions. And they do have the capacity to speak multiple languages or have assistance in multiple languages if that's something that folks need.
All right. Okay. We'll get you to repeat that as well as some other resources a little bit later on in the podcast. But if you could just go ahead and repeat that phone number right now for us.
Sure thing. The number to Common Help Virginia is 855-635-4370. And again, multiple languages are available to assist.
Okay. All right. Very good. So we're focusing right now on the Medicaid benefits, and then we'll talk about the work requirements and et cetera.
It might be helpful if I talk about resources that people could access if they have been impacted and lose their traditional Medicaid. So if people have been impacted and are going to lose their traditional Medicaid, there's a couple of resources that are still available to these individuals. And so there is a category called emergency Medicaid, and that allows people to receive coverage if they have an emergency, a medical emergency. And so if you are someone who is impacted by these changes, then you can still seek emergency care as needed. And there is an eligibility category for that that would support the coverage of those expenses. If you're not encountering an emergency but need some ongoing clinical care, there are resources available through the Fairfax County Health Department, which offers immunizations and other health resources. And so you can visit the county's health department website to learn what resources are available. If you're someone who has used Medicaid for behavioral and mental health or substance use services, or you might have some developmental disabilities, there are some supports available through the Community Services Board that may be that you may be eligible for. So it'll be important to know that if you do lose your Medicaid, that there are some county resources still available, and also emergency Medicaid may be available to you as well.
Are there any population groups that are unaffected by this change?
Yeah, great question. So children are not impacted by this particular change, and nor are pregnant Medicaid members. So if you are pregnant or a child under the age of 19, then these resident, non-citizen resident requirements do not apply to you, and you can continue to receive coverage.
I know you answered this at the beginning, but I want to verify the populations that this is affecting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll go ahead and repeat that because it could be confusing to some, because as I mentioned, prior to this change, there was a list of maybe 15 or so citizen eligibility groups that were eligible, and that list has been significantly narrowed to the following citizenship statuses, including you have to be a U.S. citizen or a lawful permanent resident, a Cuban or Haitian entrant, or a COPA, a free association migrant, which is a group of Pacific Islands. You have to be in one of those categories to remain eligible for full benefits.
Okay. All right. And again, how would folks, I assume they know if they're in those categories, but
that's right.
How would they confirm that? Or
that's right. And so if they are unsure or think they might be impacted, they could call the common help number that I referenced earlier, which is that 855-635-4370 number. And then also our state partners have begun to issue notices to impacted individuals. So be sure to check your mail. And take a look at what comes in the mail, because there are instructions on what you can do if you need help or have further questions.
Right. And this may be a dumb question, or just me not knowing. Non-citizens, what if they don't get mail?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if they are, maybe some people experience transients. You know, maybe you might be moving from one location to another. Or if you've not established kind of a permanent mailing address, when you applied for Medicaid, you had to provide a mailing address, a place where you receive mail, even if you live maybe somewhere else. And so it's going to go to that address that they have on file. If you've moved, or if you are unsure if they have the correct address for some reason, again, you're encouraged to call if you think you might be in one of those impacted categories.
Gotcha. We are on the County Conversation Podcast, and we're talking with Alicia Blackwell. She is Deputy Director of the Department of Family Services. We're talking about Medicaid today, specifically big changes in the way that program is operated and eligibility rules, et cetera, that are going into effect on October 1st. And some other questions about the emergency medical, emergency services Medicaid, but I want to transition now to the work requirements, and then we'll kind of come back to that and then talk to you a little bit about how this is impacting the Department of Family Services. So as I mentioned in the introduction, not only is it's like two parts of this, it's like the non-citizens, but it's also work requirement eligibility. talk to me a little bit and explain that work requirement.
That's right. So we talked about the first big bucket of eligibility changes that take effect on October 1st, 2026. So this is kind of the second big bucket of changes that take effect on January 1st, 2027. And included in that big bucket of changes are new work requirements and also some changes to the frequency of how often members will have to get redetermined for their eligibility. So that's an important change as well. But I'll talk first about the new work requirements. And so only some adults will be required to meet these new work requirements and more frequent eligibility renewals. And so Medicaid expansion members are the members of Medicaid recipients that will be impacted by these changes. And so these changes impact adults ages 19 through 64 with incomes of up to 130% of the federal poverty level. So what does that translate into? So for a family of one, if you are an individual who receives Medicaid through the expansion population, the cutoff limit or the amount per year that you would be earning would be about $22,000 a year that qualifies you. And so you are someone that would be impacted by these changes. And so these new work requirements include 80 hours per month of community engagement activities. And so that could be through volunteer activities or through actual work, paid work. So there are many people, many Medicaid expansion members that are already working, already meeting those requirements. And so if you're someone who's already doing that, then you're good to go. You may have some additional steps to verify that, but you're already meeting that requirement. But for some individuals who may need to engage in that 80 hours per month, we want to make sure that they have access to how to, you know, connect themselves with volunteer opportunities and working opportunities as well.
Right. You mentioned something I wanted to follow up on. You mentioned the not only eligibility requirements, but also like the recertification of that kind of thing. It seems like that's gotten a little stricter and more often as well.
You're absolutely right. And that's such an important part of this. There's a process where individuals who receive Medicaid, when they first apply, they provide a lot of information to help determine their economic status, their household income, and their resources to help determine whether they're applicable, whether they are eligible. And so that has traditionally happened once per year. Beginning January 1st, 2027, they will now have to do this every 6 months or roughly twice per year. And so in order to maintain your Medicaid coverage, if you're in this expansion group, you now have to recertify twice per year every 6 months.
Quick question about impact on Department of Family Services agency staff, as well as the Virginia agencies that are involved with this process and put everything together. Are there any estimates, since it's not into effect, do you have any estimates about how this is going to impact the populations and what it's going to cost the agency and the county government, state government, et cetera?
Yeah, so I think it's important to understand that Virginia has a state-supervised and locally administered social services system. So there are state agencies such as the Virginia Department of Social Services and the Virginia Medicaid office that oversee local departments of social services and the administration of public assistance benefits like Medicaid. So our state partners are a very important part of this process, and Fairfax and other localities have been working closely with the state to kind of inform them about our concerns related to the increase in administrative work that this causes to our public benefit staff. So for our public benefit staff, they were previously having to do this determination work once per year, and now it is essentially doubling for this population. And so our leadership at DFS has been very kind of thoughtful in planning for this increase in work. And so last year, we worked to make a request to the Board of Supervisors, who granted us 13 additional positions to be able to manage the increase in administrative workload as it relates to ensuring that Fairfax residents can continue to get timely responses as they are applying to Medicaid, and also as they are managing these more frequent recertifications. And so we're incredibly grateful to the Board of Supervisors for giving us these resources. And we have an internal working group of about 20 staff within the Department of Family Services that have been spearheading the organizational kind of response to these changes, which includes the administrative increase in the work, but then also making sure that we are deploying some community engagement strategies of our own to make sure people are aware of these changes. And for those that remain eligible, we want them to reach out to us, and we want to be supportive to them to do what's necessary for them to maintain their coverage.
Right. You mentioned some of the things that Family Services has changed and worked on to improve the system. New staff, money, different things like that. Other things that people wouldn't think about when they think about a change like this, in addition to money and staffing?
Yeah. So I think one of the important changes is our community engagement strategy and how we're working to get the word out. And so we're partnering with sister departments within the county. So neighborhood and community services. We're leveraging their relationships with community partners to disseminate materials because they work more closely to the community. So we're working with them to get materials in community centers and other places that people frequent so that they can, be aware of these changes and do what's necessary to maintain their eligibility. We're also working closely with the health department to help with their readiness for people that might lose Medicaid in this process. So that our health safety net is prepared and aware to support these individuals if they do lose their coverage. But we're also working with the private sector, with partners like Inova, to include them in our strategy because they obviously see patients with Medicaid. And we want to make sure that they are part of our safety net as well in terms of people who are eligible, maintaining that Medicaid, but also where they can support getting messaging out so that people can maintain their Medicaid as well.
Is there a single, most important actionable step you want listeners to take right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So our Virginia state partners that I mentioned earlier, who provide oversight to us, are the agencies that are sending out the notices to impacted individuals. We know for the non-citizen residents that those notices have started to roll out. So we want people to make sure they're checking their mail and making sure that they're staying abreast of what's going on. If people in the expansion group believe they might be impacted, I know the state is beginning to roll out information about when those notices will go out, and also what people will need to do to make sure that they're compliant with those new work requirements. And so really this is about opening your mail and knowing who to call if you have questions or think you might be impacted by these changes.
Right. Well, since you mentioned resources and who to call, that's a perfect segue. Who should people call or where should people look to find out more information about what we're talking about?
Yeah, we want to make sure people have trusted resources and accurate information. And so we are directing folks in the community to go to the DFS, the Department of Family Services county website. So Fairfax County Department of Family Services website. And you can search that website by entering Medicaid changes. And we have a dedicated page that can provide information as it relates to those Medicaid changes. And then also the Virginia Common Help phone number that I mentioned earlier at 855-635-4370 is available as a trusted resource. And then the Common Help Virginia website is another trusted place where people can find reliable information.
Yeah. Okay. Anything I haven't asked you that really was hoping I would ask you, or you feel important to share in this particular moment?
Mm-hmm. So we've talked about the new work requirements. We've talked about the more frequent eligibility renewals. I think there's one other tidbit that's important for folks to know, and that's related to retroactive coverage periods. And so This could be a quite technical explanation, but I'll simplify it a bit by saying that from the date when people apply for Medicaid, there's often a look back period from that date. So if they receive care, if they apply on, let's say, August 19th, but they haven't gotten a decision about their care until September 19th, that 1 month period is generally a period of coverage. That period now is a 3 month window. But with these changes, that period will reduce for all members. It reduces from 3 months to 1 month for that expansion group, and then 2 months for all other members. So that's a shorter kind of look back period of coverage. So that's important for folks to know, but that's also bundled in these changes. Mm. So that's something that's important. I think we've talked about just the healthcare safety net and just making sure that people know that if they lose coverage, that the county does have resources available to support them through the health department and some of the free clinics, and also through the community services board for those behavioral health supports that exist. And so we want people to make sure they're staying healthy and that they know that there's support. And for those non-citizen residents, knowing that they can be covered through emergency Medicaid if they do encounter an emergency health situation.
Yeah. As I said at the beginning, this is a very meaty and heavy topic. So appreciate you going into it and explaining it so at least I can understand it. Hopefully our listeners can understand it. Last 15, 20 seconds, final thoughts from you about why somebody listening right now should really care about this conversation.
Yeah, it's absolutely important to those who currently receive Medicaid, but you may be someone who does not receive Medicaid and know someone that might. And so it's important for our community partners to spread the word and just know that this has the potential to impact over 50,000 Fairfax County residents. And so it'll be important for all of us to kind of be concerned about the population that might be impacted, and especially as community professionals and community partners, getting the word out to where people can get that trusted information, which of course is on the Fairfax County Department of Family Services website, and by searching changes to Medicaid, also knowing that there's free and low-cost health resources available in Fairfax County, and using the commonhelp.virginia.gov website for more trusted information.
Awesome. Alicia, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me today.
Oh gosh, you did a great job, and I think our listeners are going to enjoy it and find great value, so appreciate that.
Thanks.
That is going to do it for this edition of the County Conversation Podcast. Again, thanks to Alicia for being here. Thanks to you for listening. If you want to hear more conversations with Fairfax County's finest, be sure to follow us on soundcloud.com/Fairfax County, as well as our podcast webpage, fairfaxcounty.gov/podcast. The County Conversation is produced by the Fairfax County, Virginia government.